You're listening to Heartland. I'm Rachel Otwell, arts and culture reporter for NPR Illinois, joined now by my co-host, Kyle Isham. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, Rachel. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. And we had a couple trips that we went on.
We went to Thailand. Oh, wait, no.
Well, it's been a while for me, but we did talk to someone who has made that trip often,
yes,
as well as to other places.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit more about the guest we'll hear from.
This is a local Springfield native who now lives in Thailand and also travels throughout the world giving tours for students on gap year programs. And he also works at a farm in Thailand, and he'll talk about that experience, Greg Pettis.
Yes, Greg will be telling us more about his experiences and how they relate to his sense of spirituality.
The only consistent truth I've encountered is the lessons learned from the wilderness, from engaging in nature.
Also, right ahead, we have another postcard. This one comes from the Liturgical Arts Festival, and we visited the Jubilee Farm, which is right outside of Springfield in New Berlin, and Dominican sisters live there. We got to visit with some of them and learn more about it. All that and more ahead
on Heartland. So, Rachel, while I was at the studio, we had our own art show that night. You were at the Liturgical Art Fair. Would you like to speak about your experiences there?
Yeah, the Liturgical Arts Festival is something that happens every 2 years in Springfield, and it involves a bunch of different churches and congregations and the Springfield Art Association, for one. And that's where I went to see the opening of the visual art component. There were over 90 works in the gallery from 22 different states, and they will be there until May 28th. So if you're local, you still have time to go check out the artwork. But instead of me describing it, I'll just go ahead and play a postcard from the event, and you can hear the voices of some of the artists and organizers themselves.
Hi, I'm Betsy Dollar. I'm the executive director here at the Springfield Art Association. Well, it is the opening of the Liturgical and Sacred Art Exhibition, and this is something that happens every other year in conjunction with the Greater Springfield Festival, and we are the visual arts component of that. And this year, we have brought in about 90 pieces from 22 different states across the country in pretty much every media you can imagine. The gallery is packed in a really diverse range of spiritual artwork. I love it because it does give a voice to a broader range. And since I've been here, the range seems to be broadening as well with different points of view and different ideas about spirituality, which is great. I love it. I don't have anything in this particular show, but both in terms of centering myself, so the practice of making art, whether the work itself is particularly spiritual or not, is sometimes not the issue. It's just the practice, just like doing yoga would be, to sort of stop and center and focus. And then sometimes the outcome is unintentionally more spiritual than I know when I'm creating it. I recognize it later.
Hi, I'm Diane Singler. I'm from Irving, Illinois. It's both an illustrative and an expressive piece from the Book of Genesis. Just very colorful background, which expresses God's presence in there. It's a visual prayer. It's a way for me to share my faith visually. It's mostly acrylic, liquid acrylics, which are kind of like a watercolor. And a crackling paste gives the texture, makes the tree look very textured. We have prayers that we say out loud, and we do prayers by action, I believe, but I think this is a way to just show God I appreciate His creation.
Well, hello, Martin Wolf. I'm the minister of the Abraham Lincoln Unitarian Universalist Congregation, and I'm also on the board of the Liturgical Arts Festival. Unitarian Universalism is a faith tradition that in this country goes back just over 200 years. There's a lot of diversity in terms of theology as well as types of people. We welcome people regardless of their theology, regardless of their gender identity, regardless of whether they are straight or LGBTQ, and we just try and build a beloved community. For myself personally, I started as an art major many years ago, and so I began painting when I was 8 years old using oil paints, and so to see the technical ability and creativity of other people is just very refreshing. And what you see here is an assembly of sensibilities which really excites the imagination.
Hi, I'm Felicia Olin, and my piece is called Altar of Adam and Eve. I came across a frame that just looked religious. It had two openings and an arch, and it just looked really old. So I was like, well, it's got two openings, so I'll probably do like an Adam and Eve piece in it. Ended up deciding to do skeletons instead of people, Adam and Eve, which kind of makes sense because they're mortal and they died and they're skeletons now. So I made them both with little black halos instead of gold because they're sinners. And I gave Adam a missing rib part, and where he's holding his hand, where his missing rib is, Eve has the apple in hers, and I made them kind of reaching out to each other. I think I have to get into a mindset that's meditative to even do art. So I feel that that's like a creative spirituality. So definitely it's not always representational. It's usually not. But it always takes part of my spirit to make it. So that's definitely always there.
So again, that came from the Liturgical Arts Festival. You just heard from Felicia Olin, of course, a Springfield artist who's very well known. The art on display, her art and the art of 90 or so other artists from 22 states, all is on display at the Springfield Art Association until May 28th. And so it was interesting to talk to some artists who, you know, a lot of them said all their work is spiritual in some aspect, but they were really tasked with making it the main focus for this one. So interesting time and really cool art to see. And now we have a story that Kyle and I put together after we visited Jubilee Farm in New Berlin, Illinois, right outside of Springfield, as we mentioned. So here's that. Upon our arrival, we came upon a greenhouse where Sister Suzanne Donner is tending to the plants. She has a boombox playing for them.
The plants have, they're alive. They have energy, and they basically respond to music. And there's a lot of people who have plants in their homes and so on, and the music itself helps the plants grow and so on. And there's even a thing on the fact that they respond to the music. If the music is not hard music and so on, they do respond to the music.
Sister Donner was born in Chicago and grew up in the suburb of Crystal Lake, where she says she was always fond of the outdoors.
I'm considered the herb person here. I do herbs. I sell herbs and flower plants, and I do the floral gardens here and help with the trees and the bushes and the shrubs and whatever else I can help with.
Do you feel more, like, connected to your spirituality in this setting?
Most definitely. I think the land is a very healing part of our lives. I think more of us need to really get out and enjoy nature and be a part of nature because that's basically where we came from.
Do you have any family members or friends who feel like you're making some sort of sacrifice to be out here?
Absolutely not. No, yeah, exactly right. They are jealous. My sisters and my brother they, when they have an opportunity, they do come out here and they love it. It's part of their visiting with me and so on. There's no person asking that, you know, you shouldn't be here.
For people like me who aren't very aware of what I'm going to ask, I guess, what does being a sister mean to you?
That's a loaded question. Okay, I remember my mother, when I was a child, I remember my mother, she and I were walking down the street in Chicago, and I think I was only like 5 years old. And I remember two sisters walking on the other side of the sidewalk, and I had never seen them before. And I remember my mother saying to me something like this. I asked her, who are they? And she told me that they were sisters, and I said, well, what does that mean? And this is what she told me. She told me, she said, you know how your dad and I love one another, and it's just the love of, you know, your dad and myself. These sisters have an opportunity to love everyone. And I just thought that that saying kept with me that whole time as I was growing up. And also, nature helped also, because we lived on almost an acre of land. And I had the opportunity to go out and experience nature all the time. So I don't think maybe children today do as much, but I think they really should, because it really does help.
As we walk the acres, we take in the sight of rolling hills, a rarity for Central Illinois. Students from the University of Illinois Springfield volunteer, as well as other people in the community, and they get a hands-on look at ecology in action. In another field over, there's a handful of llamas and alpacas. Sister Sharon Zayak is one of the founders of this location. She moved in May of 1999 after relocating from a retreat center in Riverton. She says she wanted more land that could be used to grow food. And as for the llamas?
You need large animals to complete your relationship with the land. Mm. And llamas are very, very easy to take care of, as opposed to cows and horses, which are very expensive. They're gentle on the land, they're very healthy, they live a long time, their manure is really full of protein, the fiber can be used for, you know, as I said, for weaving and spinning. And they're also good PR. I mean, people will stop by and say, what are those, or why do you have llamas? And then it gives us a chance to explain what we're about here.
We head inside the large white farmhouse with Sister Zayak to talk more about her life here. Outside, it's busy as people mow and tend to the garden, which now feeds 100 or so sisters living in Springfield. Sister Zayak says, like most women who become sisters, she just felt a calling toward it. Her family was Catholic but not religious, didn't attend church except for Christmas and Easter. By her senior year of high school, though, she knew it was what she wanted to do. She was living in California 45 years ago when she came across a group of Dominican sisters from Springfield. She decided to move to Illinois to be with them, a decision that was hard for her family. In the country, there are about 20 different congregations of Dominican sisters. The Dominican Order is worldwide and was founded by Dominic de Guzman, a Spanish priest living in the 1200s. It's one of the oldest orders and is one built on the idea of spreading the word of God by traveling among the people. And to this day, it's known for its devotion to learning, studying, and charity. So what's the process like deciding once you want to be a sister? Like, do you just fall into an order, or do you have to do a lot of research? What's that?
You know what? Everybody does it differently. I literally fell into the Dominican Order because once I decided I wanted to be a sister, I was coming home from church one Sunday, and I happened to see some sisters standing outside the church, and so I called them, and they happened to be the Dominican Sisters of Springfield, Illinois. No matter who they would have been, that's where I would have ended up. So you can certainly see the hand of the Spirit in bringing me here, because I can't imagine being anything other than a Dominican. We may be from all different faith traditions, but we are all creatures of Earth. We are all part of the greater Earth community.
Sister Zayak founded Jubilee Farms, and Sister Anita Clary has been there much of that time, though she did spend 3 years in Peru.
Where I was a very small village, San Juan de Harpa, high up in the Andes Mountains, and the sisters there are in charge of 35 different parishes. So some places we only got to once or twice a year, depending on the rainy season and yet, but assisting with baptisms and all the different sacramental ministries.
And so how has
this idea in Peru, and now here, the communal living. How has it impacted your spiritual development?
When I first entered, I thought it would be one of the easiest things. I thought, oh, that'd be, you know, a cinch. It's actually something that's not so easy. It's something you have to put a lot of intention to. You have to choose this. There's different choices involved with it. You know that someone else has your back, too. You know, it's a very rich life.
Sister Clary does much of the fiber work that comes with shearing the llamas and alpacas, including a new venture making burial shrouds.
I actually saw some that were very simply made, but cut very unevenly and weren't very attractive. And I thought, I can make something prettier than that. And so that was really my first step. And so I use all natural products, cotton and linen, because the linen helps make the cotton be a little bit stronger, and use a variety of different lace-like designs with it. It's in place of having all the formaldehydes, and that the body would be wrapped in a shroud, or possibly like maybe in cotton clothing or linen clothing, and then in a shroud. And then there's different types of like hemp ropes or different things like that, that where the body is gently lowered into the ground. Each spot usually has a form of a marker, or some families choose to plant a tree or different flowers over it, but it's a very natural way.
Sisters Clary and Zayak have lived with numerous other sisters who have come in and out of the house here and helped on the farm. It is open to the public as a place of refuge, retreat, and renewal.
You're listening to the Heartland Podcast. We just shared our story with you about traveling to Jubilee Farm outside of Springfield, Illinois, where Dominican sisters cultivate the land as well as their own spirituality.
There's something so transformative about being out at this space because the hills are so pronounced and suddenly you feel like you are no longer in central Illinois. And I think there's a part inside all of us that needs that kind of renewal. We need spaces that help take us out of our daily life and that can then put us in touch with something deeper. And this land is very full and steeped in that. Just being out there, there was this kind of transformative effect to put one into a different state of mind and being. And it was very natural then to become calmer and quieter and more
reflective.
Yes.
And I look forward to walking the labyrinth they have there.
She said it was a half mile in.
And a half mile out or something.
Yes. So unless you're really lost and then maybe it's like will take you two
all
miles
day
to get out.
Yeah.
Also, what I liked is that they aren't just completely cultivating the land. There's a lot that is just set aside for prairie restoration. And at one point she talked about how one of the biology students commented about how they actually saw flowers growing that they had only seen in their textbook.
Right.
Next, we have Greg Pettis. He is originally from Springfield, and he had originally traveled to Tibet to teach English there. And once he did that, he felt really transformed by that trip and kept finding other ways to travel. And he currently works for one group who does gap year education programs. And then through this, through a different organization that does that, he discovered a farm in Thailand and now works and lives there as well.
I've worked for a couple of alternative schools, experiential education centers. There's a number of names, I suppose, for them. But in a nutshell, they're gap year programs. So we take university students on trips abroad. Some of them actually are domestic, but they are, if they're domestic, they're working with indigenous peoples here in the States. So the whole idea is to immerse students in another culture, experience another world, another way of seeing and being.
Okay, and so you were just currently in Nicaragua?
Yes, the most recent trip was in Central America. It was in Nicaragua and Costa Rica, but primarily Nicaragua, yes.
And so what were you doing there with the students?
We spent quite a bit of time living on an organic farm. We were learning about the local bioregion and what a seed saving collective, actually trying to work with native species and bring back some of the seeds that have been destroyed because of different organizations. But we also were working a lot with studying just about like different uprisings, primarily with the Sandinista people, and learning about the history of U.S. relations within Nicaragua. Given the current election coming up, I think things have kind of intensified somewhat. The urgency of world relationships, primarily in this case between Nicaragua and the U.S. regarding trade, among other things, but primarily trade. People are quite nervous about the upcoming election, of course, and the memory of Ronald Reagan. You know, with the students that we have coming into our program, I think it's safe to say most Americans don't really know a lot about that situation. But in a nutshell, there is a tremendous amount of effort to make sure that, you know, our trade systems are set up in our favor, always in our favor. And this usually works at the expense of the Nicaraguans in this case. It's pretty tense right now. You can commonly see pinatas of Donald Trump in any given city, and they have a humor about it, and they're quite kind people.
How has travel influenced and expanded your own spirituality?
Well, tremendously. Before answering that question, of course, you have to look at what spirituality is. There's probably hundreds of thousands of different ways of defining that. And for me, it's been a long journey into redefining what spirituality is. I was born into a very evangelical household. Grew up in Springfield, Illinois, of course. My time there was very conservative, and I was basically taught that my family's view of definition of Christianity was the view, the way into a spiritual life. And at the time, I definitely resonated with that. And I don't necessarily have a problem with that worldview at this time. However, I do see, because of travel, there's probably millions of ways of entering into this supposed spiritual life, depending on, again, where you are from and who you are around and what stories, mythologies you've immersed yourself within.
How has your own connection to the earth informed and guided your spirituality?
Very much so. Sometimes when you talk with people about spirituality, there'll be a recognition of some higher force or higher intelligence that's guiding us along. And I definitely agree with that. It all came about very slowly, slowly within being in the Boy Scouts back in Springfield, being exposed to the Beastie Boys back in Springfield, who had at one time a deep connection with Tibetan Buddhism. So slowly, through like skateboarding and random encounters with the Boy Scouts and nature, I started following music. I started following adventure because of primarily those two things, which all started in Springfield and eventually led me to Colorado, where you have these giant mountains. And because of that, you have people who are interested in giant mountains and the spiritualities, the people, and the land that comes from those bioregions. So we get a lot of people who are interested in the Himalaya. So slowly, slowly, you know, the puzzle came together, and I met someone serendipitously who was doing the Peace Corps in Tibet. As soon as I was able, right after graduating from university, I went to meet her. And for sure, I felt a connection right away. That was very peculiar, given the demographic I had been. Suddenly, I felt more at home than I had ever felt before in a surrounding that was extremely foreign to me. Through the practice of primarily Tibetan Buddhism, I started finding a active spirituality. I was not forced to have faith in a higher being like I was recommended to follow that belief system growing up. I was forced instead to weigh my experiences against wisdom and move forward with compassion. This took place in vast spaces of wilderness. Whether I was in Colorado or Tibet or anywhere in India or the Himalayan regions, there was always, always, always huge expanses of wilderness around me.
And so from here, would you like to talk some about what daily life is like on Pun Pun Farm and how you came to be involved in this group?
Sure. So Pun Pun Farm was a wonderful place that I came across by chance when I started working for Carpe Diem Education, one of the gap year schools I work for. They're primarily a seed saving operation. It's located about an hour's north of the city of Chiang Mai in Thailand, not too far from the Burmese border, Myanmar border. Just came there by chance because on all of our programs, we always have an element of sustainable living. We're looking at simplistic living, whether it's building with raw tools, i.e. like adobe style, or with cob, something like this, and then basic organic farming techniques.
And so How has working with the earth so directly like that then kind of influenced your own spirituality and how your spiritual practices come into being and express themselves?
For me and my personality, all of the world's great wisdom traditions are interesting. It's like a hobby, and I really enjoy learning about Hinduism, about Buddhism, about Islam. Any of these traditions are very, very special and exciting stories. However, with few exceptions, and there are exceptions, the only consistent truth I've encountered is the lessons learned from the wilderness, from engaging in nature. There's constant metaphors that come out that teach me how to live and then how to teach and how to see like these bigger systems in the world and what's working and what's not. It all seems to be mirrored within wilderness, and we can play a direct part in that in the garden. One thing I always recognize when I return to the States is this high level of stress that I feel most Americans tend to have because of how hard people need to work just to make ends meet. And so they're disconnecting themselves from that which is natural all the time, so much so that most of our students, I would say it's safe to say, cannot name you five plants in their local bioregion. They're so detached from the natural world. The implications of this is quite massive, I think. The more time you spend in the garden, the more peace you find, the less stress you get immediately. And then you quickly realize that all the things that you've been working so hard for are actually found quite easily. It's easy to build a house. You can build a house out of mud in about 1 to 2 months, and you build community through that process. And so you have a connection and a relationship with people, and that void, that loneliness is filled. You're not in debt. You're fulfilled. You made something beautiful with your hands, something that we use less and less as well. And you get more in touch with your body through being in dirt and connecting with land. And you eat healthy, and so you're healthy. And all these things start to spin a web of spirituality in a way that I think is universal. You see it from sea to shining sea.
So you were just listening to Greg Pettis, who has been traveling in Nepal, Tibet, Nicaragua, and Thailand. So Rachel, you and I have both traveled, and we've had that experience of meeting community in other cultures. And so I was just wondering what that experience was like for you.
Well, after hearing Greg's amazing story, of course, what comes to mind for me is being in Thailand, just an hour away from where he said he was, in Chiang Mai, at a place called the Elephant Nature Park, and it's run by Lek Chalert, who is a internationally known animal rights activist, especially, of course, when it comes to elephants. And I spent a week there while traveling with my mother. The place is held together by the fact that there are, I don't even know how many, anywhere from maybe 20 to 50 people who are there all the time and who are locals, and they cook communal meals. Everything is mostly vegan, but at least vegetarian. You know, you live communally while you're there in these little apartments that are together almost in complexes, although they're very sparse living. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of the whole idea of voluntourism that I took part in there because, you know, these were people on holiday who wanted to spend a week with elephants. But it was nice because a lot of the time we were doing valuable work. Like there was one day I spent cutting down corn in fields and I felt pretty legit. Anyway, I don't think I could ever do it again. But one day spending several hours out in the hot sun and doing that was enough for me. But the sense of community there, you know, these people live with each other constantly. And instead of one person having the duty of washing the fruits for the elephants to eat, it's something where 15 people will be in the same room. You kind of turn it into an assembly line. And I know even talking to the ladies at Jubilee Farm about the contemplation that can go into that work and how it almost becomes like a meditation in and of itself, especially when it's something you're doing for the sake of community and for the sake of taking care of animals that otherwise would be mistreated. That was a really great experience, and also kind of what Greg was talking about how here in the West we're just always so busy all the time and we're always so distracted. For me, that was a great example of being the opposite, getting more done in a day but not being so worried about what time it was or who I needed to be calling back or anything like that. And then another good example, which is kind of, it was very different, but when I was younger, I had gone to Kenya for a month and ended up in this really rural area called Thika. And I was in a slum, really. I worked at an orphanage that had all girls and Mama Faith, who kind of oversaw it. There was one woman who was the preacher of a church that was in the yard of the orphanage. It was just one room, almost like a barn. And that, again, was a kind of community coming around, taking care of these kids. And it felt like family. And immediately within being there for a couple days, I was treated like family. And I definitely haven't had similar experiences in the West, not to say they don't exist, but I can relate to Greg about feeling that way. And maybe it just, maybe you feel that way being outside of your home anyway. Maybe you're just more open to that. Maybe you're feeling the need for community more than what you're already used to back home or something. So it just seems vibrant.
And I like what Greg said, though, that once you get out of the United States, which is so individualistic and centered on the realization of one's personal goals, everything is directed towards the tribe or the community or the local group that is all pitched in together to make life just tolerable and feasible, but also joyful. And I liked how Greg said, when they work, they sing, they laugh, they tell jokes. There's this sense of playfulness infusing all of the actions that they do. And I think we really miss that by so much of the isolation we have in our culture at this current moment.
Definitely. And especially in my experience in Kenya was mostly, it was all women's work, you know, cooking meals together and washing clothes together and tending to the garden together. But it wasn't, it didn't seem like a chore at the time because, like you said, when you're doing it with others and when you know what it's for and the purpose and you're feeding the children with the food that you're making, it's just more impactful. And you start to think less about yourself because you are just so much a part of the community at the time. So definitely is something that, you know, it's hard to integrate when you come back home. But I think a lot of us who have those experiences come back kind of craving more of that.
Yeah, just more ways to work together, be together, and share in food together, which I think is so important. When you eat with your friends or people that you're just getting to know, there is a kind of intimacy that develops there, and it's so nourishing to our life. We can't exist fully without that part woven into our daily life.
So we're ending the show today with a song by one of Kyle's favorite artists. So I will let him tell listeners all about her. And thanks for listening.
This is Bat for Lashes, the stage name of Natasha Khan. She has a new album coming out July 1st called The Bride. And it is a concept album involving a bride who then the fiancé dies on the way to the church. And so then a whole adventure kind of gets thrown into motion. And so this song is called In God's House.
Day. Oh!